Talk Radio 1100. It's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now, here's your host for Chatterbox.
Video game radio. There we go. Now it sounds good. Okay, your typing is exceptionally loud tonight. My name is Ara. This is Chatterbox Video Game Radio.
I'm Colin.
That's Colin over there. Alan is not here tonight. What's he doing tonight?
He's eating.
He's eating. Okay, so, you know, I know he's pretty thin. He needs to eat, so that's probably pretty important. Maybe he'll call in. Maybe he won't. So we've got a... As usual, we've got more things to talk about than time. So let's just get into it right away. I wanted to talk about this article I read today about this guy named Tom Chick.
The Tom Chick.
I have not heard of this guy before. I'll tell you right now. I haven't heard any. This is funny. Our microphones seem to be like 100 times sensitivity tonight. Maybe they like upgraded the equipment or something. Anyway, if you hear typing, it's Colin typing.
Yep.
If you hear anything bad, I'll just blame it on Colin.
Let's stay out of the chat room, too, because the chat room's there. So go to chatterboxgameshow.com and log into the chat room. We can all talk.
Yes.
Ask your questions
very nice.
Also.
Yes. So thank you for bringing up the chat room. I'll interject something before we really get going here. Alan had his wedding this past weekend, and I had the fortune to meet a few people who regularly attend the chat room. So hi, guys, everybody in the chat room. And how do you get back to the chat room?
You just go to chatterboxgameshow.com, and then you go on live chat room.
Okay,
click that.
So we're always welcoming more people into the chat room. It's good times. You can communicate with us live during the show. That's really cool. Okay, so Tom Chick. So I read an article about this guy, and this guy is ostensibly famous for writing a bad review of a game.
It's on his Wikipedia page.
And perhaps this is maybe even, perhaps, Colin, you tell me if this is a valid thing to say here, maybe even the most famous bad review, or one of the most famous bad reviews.
It's up there.
Okay, so I haven't heard of this guy before, but I read this article about him and I wanted to spend a while on the show talking to you guys, because I immediately like this guy now. And the short of it is that this guy wrote a review of Deus Ex that was bad, and basically incited all kinds of riot and mayhem amongst the gamer community because his opinion was, I guess, different from the masses, shall we say, or the fans even, shall we say.
Let's make this clear, though. This is the famous Deus Ex by
Warren
Spector.
So this is interesting, right? Because it's not like he wrote a bad review of
Monster Hunter Tri.
I was trying to think of some kind of monster truck game, but it's not like he wrote a bad review of like carnival games or something, right? No, it was a game that's been almost universally lauded. But it brought up a lot of interesting points, and I'm just going to read an excerpt from his interview. This was from rockpapershotgun.com, so if you go there, you can read the whole interview. The article is called Tom Chick, the Man Who Hated Deus Ex. And then we'll just talk about a few things. So this is Tom Chick talking about basically the review he wrote and the reactions he got from it. All right, so Tom says, "We all have strong opinions about different things, and I'm lucky enough that some of these made an impression on people, for better or worse. But I do wish the reaction was to wonder why I didn't like Deus Ex. Instead, it's often just shorthand to dismiss something else I've written. Oh, he didn't like Mass Effect 2? Well, he didn't like Deus Ex either. That's just lazy, and it ultimately hurts the level of discourse when we talk about video games. For instance, if I hear that somebody doesn't like Casablanca or Jaws or Moon, I want to know why he didn't like it. Those are interesting conversations, and at their best, we each learn something, even if it's just about each other. But unfortunately, these are conversations missing in the internet video game culture. people tend to judge opinions based not on their insight, but whether they agree with that opinion. A good review isn't a good review. It's a review you agree with. So this resonates with me like you wouldn't believe, right? So, and this happens all the time. I'm sure you know everything. I mean, you see this constantly. You know, it's people think good reviews. I mean, I couldn't have said it better myself. You know, it's good if you agree with it. If you don't agree with it, it's a bad review. I mean, whatever happens to independent thought in this world, right? I know we're just talking about video games here, but come on. I mean, this is something that we're all really passionate about. And instead of being really passionate about it and learning from each other, right, it's like, especially the internet communities, and maybe, I don't know, maybe this is like because the internet's kind of like all of a sudden everything turns into road rage immediately if you're on the internet. Like
anonymity, plus you can just say whatever you want. And this is the video game culture we're talking about here. These are people who are lauded for their insanity in defending their video game purchases. And I think that leaks into the press too.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I think it does, and I think that it probably leaks into non-internet situations too. And I don't know, it's interesting because this is one of these kinds of cultures that's really just like developed into this sort of thing without like anybody really being looking after it or really paying too much attention, right? It's just become this way. And I for one don't think it's healthy. And at least it shouldn't be. It shouldn't spill over into the press. I'll put it to you that far. I mean, the press should have some level of
objectivity when they come into it.
Objectivity, professionalism, things like that. But it really hurts me because when I do see the press, the few times that I do see the press in a public spot where they're defending what they do, I've always seen it degenerate into the defense of, well, we're doing this to entertain you. And this is kind of like the total cop-out argument to relieve themselves of any responsibility whatsoever. It's somehow the activity of being press has degenerated into a purely entertainment activity where they can say anything they want for any reason. And as long as they're getting their jollies off of it, that somehow legitimizes it. And I don't agree with that either.
Well, this just reminds me of a conversation I had when I was interviewing Anthony Birch for a interview that I did with him. And he was saying that what Destructoid does isn't journalism. It's sensationalism mixed with a little bit of just reviews. Like, that some people don't view their job as journalists, right, as being a real journalist.
Right. Now, okay, so we're going a little off track, but this is good. So we're just going to keep going on this road. That's interesting because it's like this kind of brings the question, well, what is journalism in the first place, right? Because I don't know of a good definition, honestly, of the word, right? Like, that's actually a very good, like, what you just said, that Anthony Birch said, is actually a very, very good description of what, let's say, like, Destructoid is, right? But at the same time, it's like, well, we don't even have to call it journalism, you know? It's just be interesting instead of stupid. How about that?
Yeah.
Right?
Well, the biggest problem I had when I was reading that article, like you said before, was that flock mentality. This guy couldn't even publish his article because it didn't fit in with the norms.
Right. So let's talk about that. So specifically what we're referring to is that when he wrote this Tom Chick guy, his Deus Ex interview, he originally wrote it for a site, for a CNET website called Game Center. And we can totally hear that, dude. Can you hear that?
I'll back it up. I'll back up the laptop.
Yeah, maybe we'll get like a rubber mat for your laptop or something. But this is not good radio. We are also professional.
Do you want me to leave the chat room and just sit by itself?
No, just leave it on there. We'll pretend like you're typing, but not really typing, and we'll get you like gloves or something. Okay. So the original review was basically evaluated by this guy's editor, right? And it was a poor review, not in the sense there's a bad review, but the evaluation of the game was not a positive evaluation, right? So basically they ditched his review and they said, well, everyone else here likes this game and you don't, so we're not going to run it. We'll just assign it to someone else. And Tom Chick ended up selling that same review to another publication, which actually ended up publishing. And there's another funny story there because at the same time, he was asking his original employer, I guess you could say, CNET, right? Like, oh, what's your scale? Is it 1 to 10 or 7 to 9, right?
Like, yeah.
Because 90% of games are either graded from a 7 to a 9, while at the same time everybody furiously swears that the scale is actually from 1 to 10.
Yeah.
Right. And they're like, no, it's 1 to 10. It's not 7 to 9. And then so he asks his editor or somebody over there. He's like, okay, well, you know, so is a 5 an average game? 5 is average. And they're like, yes, 5 is an average game. So, you know, if I give a game a 5, this means that there's nothing really bad about it. It's just completely average. And they're like, yeah, that's right. So he's like, well, now he's thinking in his head, okay, well, now this game's below average. I'll give it a 3, right? And a 3 is unheard of. Like, nobody gives 3s. Like, if you give a 3, like, this is like, at least in some circles, some kind of, like, message to the PR person, like, please do never send your product to us ever again, never talk to us again. At least that's how the PR people take it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But, like, on the other side of that, too, game sites like 1UP.com have taken a stand against, like, the whole grading system of 1 to 10. They've gone, like, an A to F, well, A to D, I think, is the ratio.
Yeah, and that's more honest.
Yeah.
I think that's better, but at the same time, it's like they're just saying, well, okay, we're just going to assign a letter instead of a number for our 7 to 9.
Yeah, but at the same, I think sites like 1UP have taken, like, their C is an average. Like, most games get a C on that website.
Right.
And in Destructoid, too, like, Jim Sterling, I know he writes reviews, and then he gets, like, chewed out all the time because his reviews are usually, like, 2s or 3s.
Right.
Well, that's not mainstream,
right.
I guess.
Well, going along with what Birch said, I'm not sure if what's on there is reviews or writing either. So
I think Jim Sterling's great. He's hilarious.
Yeah, okay. So, what else are we talking about here? Now, the interesting thing... We're not done yet. The interesting thing about the review scale is that there's so much baggage with the 1 to 10 scale that I don't think anyone could ever use it legitimately anymore. And I think that's a good reason why maybe, you know, 1UP went to the grading scale, is because there's with all these numbers, like, you don't really realize it at first, but there's baggage. If you see a game with a 5 in a review, if you have any appreciable history with video games, it is very difficult to detach yourself from the idea that this is a horrible game, you know, because they don't give out 5s. So for 1UP to switch to a completely different scale, like, there's less baggage with that, and, okay, well, there's baggage with the C, but a C sounds fair. C sounds normal. Not so with the 5. Okay,
yeah.
We'll be back. We got 3/4 of a show left.
Arizona's News Talk Leader, KFNX, AM 1100.
Welcome to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. I'm Colin.
And I remain Ara. And if you'd like to call in, you can call our toll-free number. That's 602... No, that's definitely not a toll-free number. Our toll-free number is 866-536-1100. And if you're local, you can call that number, too. And also, we got to mention UAT, the University of Advancing Technology. They're our sponsor. They help us out a lot, and you should totally go there and learn how to make games and good stuff like that.
Yes.
Okay, so let's stay on this Deus Ex thing, because I wanted to ask you a couple questions, Colin. I mean, for one thing, you know, let's consider how the game press views themselves. Okay, so, like, let's say, for example, a site like Destructoid, right? Now, they're one of the better-known sites, right?
Right.
You know, we know a lot of people on there. We think they're cool. But in terms of, well, let me just put it out like this. Do you think that they have any obligations to how they do things?
Well, I think
one way or the other.
I think that they make a pretty clear point in saying that they're not all, like, they're not straight journalism. They always have a little bit of personal flair in there.
Right.
And I don't think that they are, judging by the review scores released, like Jim Sterling, I know Anthony Birch released a few reviews, all of their reviews aren't like, These are all seven games, even though they're really like a five or a two on that full scale.
Right, and who knows what those numbers mean anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that's one of the reasons why I don't like ratings. It's like, what is a seven? I mean, like, what is really a seven? You can't encapsulate the content of an entire game into a number. It's not possible.
I know back in the day, 1UP tried to not do game scores at all and just do the review, but just do the review, read the article. You don't get that little, like, number or letter or whatever it is. But then the review viewings dropped by like 50%.
Right. No, and this is the interesting thing. This is an interesting phenomenon, because if you really want to be honest about having a discourse and a discussion and exchange of ideas about games, then you have to resign yourself to the fact that the only way that this can truly be facilitated is in a forum where you are not distilling the game down to a number. Because that is intellectually dishonest. Because there is no game, there's no product with the level of complexity that games have, none of them can be sufficiently described in that way.
Yeah.
You're always going to throw out something. And not just something, we're talking about, you're going to throw out a lot if you're just expressing that. Now, here's the interesting thing about what you mentioned, right? So you said, okay, so 1UP or some other site tried, we're going to do away with scores, and all their ratings dropped, or all their viewers or readers or all that stuff went down like crazy, right?
Right.
So this is interesting, because when you have a number, right, like, what does it do? It does a couple things. Like, one of them is that it removes your need to have to read an entire article to glean something from it, right? Or at least skim an entire article.
Yeah.
All you really need to do is look at the number, and if it's the number that you like, then you look through the article for things that agree with you, and you get happy. And if it's the article, if the article has the number you don't like in the review, then you look through it and you look at things to piss you off, and then you go tell your friends about how pissed off you are that the stupid article wrote this, you know, was a stupid review, and so on.
Well, some people are just looking for blood too, like on the forums.
Well,
like,
this is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I think that actually the whole thing of reviews is this psychological game that most people are playing and they don't even realize it. And I'm talking about, you know, the number's there, right? So, now we can argue about the number.
Why do you think that people go out looking for blood? Do you think they're trying to validate their, like, purchase? Like, oh, I bought this $300 console, and I bought a $60 game on top of that.
Yeah, now that gets into some really much deeper
muddy
psychology.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think it's muddy. I think it's funny. If you read about psychology, you'll find out, just like human social psychology, that people engage in psychological games all the time that are not necessarily – it's not necessarily bad or defective or you know, anything like that. But it's just an artifact of the way human beings communicate and interact with each other. And the funny thing is that it's almost like these numbers that are dispensed are a vehicle to give people things to get excited about or talk about in – Maybe an easier, more accessible way than having to read a whole article is, right? So consider this, right? If you just have an article and you have no number, right? If I want to discuss it with you, Colin,
yeah,
for example, I have to read the article for one. So that takes more time than just reading the number or just like looking at parts of it. For two, right, like we have to actually have a discussion on a much more subtle level than most people talk about in games, which I think is great, but I don't know, maybe most people really don't have either the capacity or the inclination or the energy to really get that deep into a game. I mean, we would have to have a discussion on like, okay, maybe we'll do this, let's say for Portal, for example.
All
right,
let's talk about Portal.
So I told you before the show, that after reading this article, right, that, you know what, like, I was trying to think of what's a game that most people like that I really don't like. Then there's Portal, right? So I was trying to think about, okay, like, well, why don't I like Portal, right? So now we're going to get into a pretty deep discussion about some very subtle things about Portal that, I don't know. Maybe you will.
Yeah, let's get into this here. I want to hear what is your argument against Portal?
Okay, so there's not just one. There might be two, but the main thing is the main I have two main criticisms about the game. One of them is that now this game is essentially a puzzle-based game, right? So when the game starts getting interesting and hard, okay, these two things really, really become increasingly, let's just say, emphasized over time. The harder the game gets, and I think that they make it worse. One of them is that you have to really, it's for me, it's laborious to have to travel through a level and look at and see like what's going on in order for me to actually apprehend and understand, you know, what the puzzle is, right? So that's a big part of the game, is that, you know, on easy levels it's trivial, so it doesn't matter. But once the levels get harder, once they get more complex, you really have to study them to figure out, okay, what's going on. I don't like that process. You know, I just don't like it.
There's
another one. Okay. So that's number one. Number two is that, and this one I would say is about twice as important as the last point. And once again, it happens when the levels get harder and harder and harder. You get to a point, and I got to this point enough times that it just frustrated me. I just wanted to stop playing, where I figured out what I had to do in order to solve the level, right? The sequence of events that I had to play, I knew what they were, but I couldn't actually execute them with enough finesse to actually finish the level. So it's the kind of thing in a game where it's like, okay, I know what to do, but I can't do it. Okay, so try it, you fail, you try it, you fail. It's like, it's the kind of thing like you try and do the triple jump to get up to the the ledge or something, right? I'm just talking generically.
Yeah.
Okay, so you miss the ledge. So now I got to go down. I got to walk, 30 feet in this direction, go around the corner, go up the steps, go around. Okay, now I'm at the point where I need to do the triple jump to get up to the ledge. And then try it. Okay, I failed. Now I have to walk all the way around. All
right.
And this kind of like all of your success is like based on just perfectly executing these series of inputs.
See, I have to disagree about perfectly executing it, because when I was playing through the game, I was able to just like, if you move quick enough and you're able to kind of foresee the events, that, like you said, laboriously looking at what you're going to do, foreseeing the events, you can just kind of like, if you don't execute it perfectly, you can just run through it really quickly. Like throw out a portal while you're going through a portal and just like try to quick and dirty it as best you can. So it's not like you don't need to execute it perfectly you just keep trying with it.
Well, you know what? It's different for different players. For you felt like you had that extra latitude in control that, you know, you were able to do that. You know, the few times that I played the game, I didn't feel like that was accessible to me. You know, I didn't feel like that was an option, that I could do that. You know, maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. Maybe I would have gained that with more practice. But honestly, I didn't have the patience to endure that pain to possibly find out extra pleasure later on.
Yeah.
Right? So
I just think that the game is so short, and the way that it challenges you by throwing out that, it's like it has a difficulty curve once you reach, like, once you get out of those little test subject areas,
right.
That's when the difficulty curve starts to spike up. But
right.
That's only for maybe like an hour out of the 6-hour game that it is. So I just feel like the difficulty curve was a nice, like, you put it all together. Like, because the game was only 6 hours.
Maybe so. And that's either way, right? My experience of going through the game, it was just, you know what? I don't have time for this.
Yeah.
I'm not going to endure this. And I'll just go play another game. Anyway, we've got 0.5 show left. We will return.
Hello, it's me, Mario. You're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's a number one.
And we are back. It's Chatterbox Video Game Radio. So we're going to shift gears a little bit. Colin has a very important announcement to you. Don't you, Colin?
I do.
And it's important by my gauge.
So while I was searching, I had some free time to kill before the show today, and I went to some GameStop. Just wanted to like kind of browse through the games. And on the GameStop on Signal Butte, which is in Mesa here in Arizona, there is a there was a rack of just old PS2 games, like $5 for a PS2 game, $5 or under. So I was going through it, looking through, and I found a gem. I found a treasure.
What'd you find?
I found the Red Star.
Very nice.
For PS2.
Very nice. So how much was it? $5?
$5.
Now was there like, was there just one of them? Or was there like
I couldn't find any other ones. I couldn't find any other ones. So this was the only one that I saw.
Okay, so like, that's a good sign. Even though I'd never get any royalties to save my life. But anyway.
So I went back home and I popped it in. I played through the first level so we could talk about it here on the show. And for a game that was finished in 2004,
yeah,
it still looks pretty nice.
Now, okay, I'm glad you said looks, because I was going to take you to task on that type of statement, which is the type of statement that I hear a lot, which is, for a game that was made blah years ago, it was still pretty decent. I find that to be interesting when people say that, because besides technology, right, besides the improvement of graphics, new games don't necessarily mean better games, and more recent games don't necessarily mean better games either. Some of my favorite games are really, really old games.
Yeah.
Right? So, but then you said you qualified that with graphics. And I said, okay. That's a nice thing to say, too, because we were never really at the forefront of technology with that game.
Well, my favorite part about the game was that you have your basic enemies that you fight that kind of just come up to you. And I played the tutorial level, so it wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
But the boss fights for a first level were pretty interesting, just the way that you take them out. It was like that Contra style, like I played Contra 3D.
Right.
And it felt a lot like that. But
yeah, and it's I mean, that was a very, very deliberate and measured aspect of our game. I mean, there were certain sensibilities to not just the Contra games, but also to the Treasure games. We'll talk about another Treasure game later on today, but that there was that type of sensibility. It's really hard to describe in a compact way, so I'm not going to try. But that we were really kind of like inspired by that sort of thing. And this, the whole, I haven't said this a lot, but the whole impetus behind this game, at least among the designers, was that there was something that we felt was special about, not this game necessarily, but about this type of game, that we wanted to, it was basically a desire to share this sensibility with more people, as many people as we could, right? And so our hope was that, you know, this is a game that was maybe, you know, a little more accessible, a little more. Than a lot of these more hardcore games, even though there's plenty of hardcore stuff in our game.
So, what exactly did you do on the game?
So, basically,
what was your main focus on the game? So we can talk about. So when I come back tomorrow and I beat, when I come back next week, I beat the game. We can talk about that specifically.
So my responsibility on this game was basically everything, anything that was not bipedal actually was stuff that I worked on. So everything that I think there's only one thing that shoots at you that is the bipedal creature. And that guy I did not build, but everything else that's not bipedal and may or may not shoot at you was basically my responsibility. So pretty much almost every single mini boss, every level in the game has two mini bosses, one halfway through and one at the end. This was another, you know, very, very treasure-esque type of thing. A lot of treasure games are very, very boss heavy, and our game was boss heavy too. So, I mean, you went through the first level, right? So you basically had...
There was three mini-bosses in that level.
Right, yeah. Right. So you had two encounters of the same guy, and then there was just one. I got to give a shout-out to one of my designer brothers. His name is Peter Ong. He basically worked on all the melee stuff, and I basically worked on all of the shooter stuff, right? So he was responsible for close-range combat. I was responsible for long-range combat in that game. He's actually going out on his own. He's actually... working at his own independent studio. He's making a really, really kick-butt Game Boy game that I hope that that we can have him on and talk about soon.
All right, so we're going to do Red Star Special all day next week.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Okay, so anything that you want to remark about your first level of play?
It was a lot of fun. I like the mechanic. I played as the Brute. There's like three classes you can play as.
Right.
I died once. I don't know, the boss. I ran right into him. I don't know. I really want to get farther into it before
anything,
I start passing judgment on it.
Anything really pissed you off?
No. It wasn't too hard, so yeah. Like, I had a good time with it, but I want to wait. I want to wait to pass judgment until next week, until I've played through it all.
Okay, so that's very fair. So we'll be I'll be looking forward to your experience playing the game. It was funny because when Alon when I told Alon about this game, right, when we first met several years ago, this was like he had me sit down and watch him play the game, and I would like comment on stuff, which I'm sure must be very, very cool to someone to have like a developer there to like it's like you got a commentary track, but it's not a track. He's there talking
to
you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's cool to engage with, you know, somebody playing the game in that way, because the funniest thing about not just this game, but just games that I've worked on is that you are as a designer, you are so critically focused on there's so many things about the game that you know that could have been better. You're so critical of yourself. And especially when Red Star came out, right? Now, look, this was like a total limited release game, totally under the radar. But the people who did review it and the people who did evaluate and tell me what they thought about it, the funniest thing was that the things that I thought they would criticize, nobody hardly ever criticized. The things that, in my opinion, were enormous flaws in the game, really, really bad mistakes that we could have, should have fixed, so on. Hardly any comment, virtually no comment. Right, the things that never entered my mind about anything one way or the other, this is what people complained about. You know, so you know, I guess you just can't win no matter what you do. But it's interesting.
All right, so what's up next?
Okay, so let's talk about PlayStation Plus.
All right, so PlayStation Plus, it's a new service that they're offering. It's kind of like Xbox Live, but for PlayStation. It doesn't mean that you can't play on... You can still play online for free, but you get added features, such as...
Such as you get... I guess what they're doing is that you get to download games that you would normally have to pay for free. So this month, for example, they have... What games do they have, Colin, that you can download?
Oh, God.
If you... So you find that... And I'll
I got it
talking.
Right here. Well, I got Wipeout HD. You get for free. You get Rallycross, PS1 Classic... Age of Zombies Mini, Warhawk pack, a free premium theme, and some Fat Princess Avatar stuff.
Okay, so the price for this thing, right, if you want to go and subscribe to this for a year, it's $50. If you want to do 3 months, it's $18, which obviously for long term is a bad deal. But here's the funny part, is that, and it's actually kind of unclear. Basically, what they're saying is that every month, they're going to make new products downloadable for free so long as you have the subscription, right? Now, if your subscription expires, ostensibly all of these things that you've downloaded during your subscription for free will disappear. Now, keep that for a second. Hold that close to your chest. Combine that with the fact that – got to do some scrolling here – websites are advertising this, like the blogs, and they're like, oh, well, if they're like trying to like tell you if it's worth it or not. Well, if you know, you can save $85 because all the stuff that you get if you actually paid for, right, would net you $85 more than the subscription for a year, right? Which sounds great, right? But this to me, all this just sounds like one of those crazy subscription services. Where it's like some kind of like Time Life, like, you know, hits of the 80s. We're going to send you a new CD of 80s songs every month until you decide to cancel. And then when you cancel, some guy's going to come to your house and take all our stuff back.
But this is funny. When you look at the PlayStation system and like they patched in an entire MMO into that game. They patched in a friends list into their system. They patched in so much stuff so they could add a bunch of value to this. I'm not saying I agree and I don't think they're going to, but it's possible right. They could add a bunch of stuff to it.
They surely can. And I mean, they really have to do something to encourage people to buy this, right? But this whole you're going to get punished if you stop subscribing thing.
Did they clarify that they were going to
do
that?
No. It's not clear at all. So we're not sure, actually. But it has, it's also, I mean, there's enough been said to confound us and a lot of other people about it. I guess we'll put it that way.
Yeah.
Right. Because they basically said, oh, you can have all these until your subscription, as long as you keep on subscribing. So what does that mean to you? That means to me that if you stop subscribing, you're going to lose a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
So this is, I don't know. Sony's in kind of a tough spot here because they need to do something to combat all the momentum that Microsoft has got with their Xbox Live service. And people are paying for Xbox Gold, right? But people have already been kind of acclimated to being able to play multiplayer for free on PSN. So, you know, Sony's got to think
of
something.
They can't go back. They can't take that away.
They can't. That's right. They can't take that away, right? But they're doing all this stuff like, you know,
the added value. You give us so much money and it'll be an added value.
Who's gonna buy $130 worth of online downloads per year? I mean, do people do that? Do you spend that much money online?
Downloads? I would do it. I spend that much money on downloads, but I'm not your average consumer.
Okay, we've got a quarter of the show left. We'll be back, guys.
Welcome back to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. I'm Colin.
And I'm Stellara.
Always. Stellara.
Always. So.
Wait, real quick.
All
right.
Go ahead.
I don't know if you guys have been following Steam at all, but they are having some crazy sales.
Let me tell you about things that Colin likes. One of them is Steam. Colin
Steam's
really
great.
Likes Steam. How much money have you spent on Steam, Colin?
I just watch.
How many thousands of dollars?
Well, I got my Mac, so I can only play, like, the Valve games are released so far. Like, my PC is a piece of crap, so I can't even, like, yeah. I gotta buy a new
PC.
But
do you play these, or do you just buy them because they're such good deals?
They're such good deals. Like, when I get a good computer, I can always go back and just, like, play all the ones that I bought already.
So you haven't actually played them. You're just putting them away for later use.
This is, like, $5 for Dirt 2. I'm never going to play Dirt 2, but $5 is
you know
a
what?
Deal.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because out of all of the deals that they're offering right now, that's the only one I think that's good. So Dirt 2 is an excellent game.
But if you guys could go buy the THQ pack, it's like $50, and you get the whole ton of War series, and you get the Company of Heroes, which is amazing. So go buy it just for those two. That's worth your value right there. 50% off. $50.
Sure.
All right. Wow. Real news.
So before we get to real news, I got to mention UAT. They're our wonderful sponsor, the University of Advancing Technology. You should go there and you can learn about making games and all kinds of other good stuff. And what have we got next on the plate, Colin?
We got some swagger up in this is.
We have some swagger. Okay, so this is, wow. You know what? I couldn't have called this one coming for if my life depended on it. We all know that advertising is getting a little insane in games, and this is just up the insanity level to just a whole new dimension of marketing and advertising. Now, in the new Madden, apparently, there's a statistic that's called Swagger that is literally sponsored. I'm not going to tell you who the sponsor is, because I don't want to give them the benefit of added advertising.
But now people go look it up, and they're going to get advertising anyways.
Well, you know what? If they're going to do that, that's fine.
Go look it
up. It's not that cool,
guys.
Go
look it up.
Okay, so you're working against the
They're paying me, obviously.
They're obviously
game reviews.
Paying you. I'm going to have to commit some heinous crime now on you after the show. Okay, so there's a swagger statistic that's literally like an ad. And it was added for advertising purposes. I don't know what kind of money EA is getting out of this. I wonder who's getting... Yeah, EA's got to get the money out of this.
Yeah.
Yeah. But apparently, it's enough, and I think it's kind of ridiculous. Every single player in this game has a swagger statistic. And what this does, you may be wondering, Colin, what does swagger
can I get,
do?
Can I get a guess? Does it make
yes,
their
you
does
can
it
guess.
Make their dance better? Does it make their ending dance better when they score a goal?
No, worse than that. Apparently, this the higher the stat is, the more likely it is that the player will celebrate in the end zone after scoring or like on their way to the end zone.
Awesome.
By like, I don't know, like doing some kind of move which hopefully doesn't make them fumble. But it looks like what they did was they implemented this so that it actually doesn't impact gameplay.
Well, that'd be ridiculous.
Because
if it impacted gameplay, that would be crossing a line, I think.
No. But it's preventing them from crossing a line. Quite the contrary. Because if this was an advertised statistic that they just put into the game for purely advertising purposes, I think it would be crazy for them to actually think to rebalance and reconsider all of the interaction rules of the game just to accommodate an advertised statistic, which may or may not go away if someone at Swagger Incorporated gets pissed off the next, you know, year or what have you.
Swagger Incorporated.
So, so actually, I think it's better that it does not seem to impact gameplay.
Well, yeah, because
then you can ignore it. Then you can be like, look, I've got my game. I like it the way it is. I don't need a made-up stat.
Madden's got a history of doing this. Like, with everything, it's like, we have the Red Bull scorecard. Here's what's going on here. And it's like, you already paid $60 for the game. If it was a free game, I could understand advertising. But why is it included with the game I paid $60 for?
Well, that's one thing. And you know what? That's a legitimate complaint. But this is a whole new thing. This is, I mean, nobody's thought of this before. I guess, hey, welcome to America. We're innovating new ways for publishers to make
money. You know what I want? I want Madden to go free-to-play, and they do the microtransaction thing, so I can only have to buy one game, and then we do some advertisements.
You'll get your wish. You'll get your wish soon enough, and I think that you'll be regretting it in about 5-10 years.
You think?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I doubt it. I'd rather pay $15 a year than $60 to get a roster update.
Okay.
Now, I guess we're getting off topic.
Yeah, well, yeah, I don't know. I don't actually play Madden all that much, so I don't really care too much. We've got, like 7-10 minutes left. Hey, guys, the line's still open if you want to call in, 866-536-1100. You can tell us if our show is a 3, a 5, or a 7 out of 10.
Three. It's a 3.
It's a 3.
There was one more thing I knew we were talking about.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, Sin and Punishment. So, Sin and Punishment 2, which I guess they're not calling it 2, they're calling it just Star Successor. This is a sequel to a game that came out on the N64, and it's coming out this week if it's not out already, actually. It's a new Wii game. It's a Treasure game, which is really cool because Treasure has actually not been releasing a lot of games as of late. And it's kind of funny because I was reading a review about this the other day, and they said that apparently Treasure said that the Wii interface device was actually what inspired them to make this game. Which sounds completely outlandish to me because the control scheme is... This is funny. The control scheme is basically the same as the first Sin and Punishment, right? But it's actually using the Wiimote now, which did not exist in the N64 days. It's almost the exact same control scheme, and it's actually better suited for the Wii interface than the original was.
Yeah. So. I never played the first Sin and Punishment. I heard they released it on, was it WiiWare or was it their virtual console?
Yeah, it might have come out on
it definitely
on
came out on one of those things.
Yeah, sure.
But it's on the Wii, so go check that out. I think it's like $15 or something. But the new one looks really interesting. I don't know, I haven't played it, I've only watched the video, and it looks like it's a pretty crazy shmup.
Yeah, like, I wouldn't call it even a shmup because it's, I don't know. This is going to get into... I don't want this to degenerate into one of the semantic things, but it seems to me like shmup is pretty much exclusively used for top-down 2D shooters. Mm. And this is a rather unconventional shooter because you're actually aiming. All your aiming is done. You have a reticle that's completely independent of your movement on the screen, and you aim that with the Wiimote. Right? Now, your movement on screen, which is usually limited to some 2D plane of movement, is done using the nunchuck joystick. Right, so you move with your left hand and you aim with your right hand. So it's totally not a regular, shmup type of control scheme.
It sounds more like Dead Space Extraction or something, where you can kind of control it and shoot people at the same time. Is that a fair comparison?
Kind of. I mean, Treasure does good stuff. So they'll be and the thing that I really like about them that a lot of game developers seem to miss entirely. Is that they have a way of showing you something novel and interesting within a framework that's not necessarily 100% novel, if that makes sense. They can do things with gameplay that are really amazing, and it's you just don't see that level of detail in other games. I really don't know how else to put it. You know,
like Nintendo status. They'll give you like Super Mario Galaxy to Super Mario Galaxy 2. It's pretty much the same concept, but they're turning on its head a little bit.
Yeah, it's just they're able to find beautiful things in the way that their mechanics work, and they're able to show you things in how to exploit them in interesting ways that it really happens on a much, much lower level. And by lower, I kind of mean more specific and atomic in terms of mechanics than a whole lot of other games. I mean, a lot of other games try to, you know, do interesting things thematically. Like, oh, this is the stage where I'm going to kill the Hydra and, you know, cut his neck off or something. And this is the stage I'm going to climb up this huge thing. And, you know, these are thematic things that are interesting, yeah. Right? But they're able to really accomplish interesting gameplay on a mechanical level where the activity of the mechanic is actually new and interesting. You know, that's what they're all about. They did that with Gradius V, which I think is one of the greatest shooters of all time. They did that with Ikaruga. They do that with almost every one of their games. They're really, really awesome at that. It's really a shame that...
Well, even with Ikaruga, they pulled off a more thematic thing, but it was, like, subtle. It wasn't, like...
Well, now, this is not to the exclusion of thematic interestingness, right?
Yeah.
So, yes, they do have, you know, a layer of thematic interest, too, right? But then they have that other layer of gameplay that, I mean, they can just do it in the way that most people can't, and I guess that's why they're treasure. And I guess that's why we're coming up at the end of the show. So anything left you'd like to say, Colin?
There is so much to talk about.
So much. Well,
don't go by Lost Cause 2. Don't go by that game.
20 seconds? 30 seconds?
Okay, just a quick warning. I played Lost Cause 2. There's only one good part of that game. That's the parachute and the grappling.
Okay, why would you play a game called Lost Cause?
Because it looked great.
It sounds like a Lost Cause.
Oh, that's it. Got me. But
okay.
Don't go by that game.
Okay, so that's it. That's the end of our show. Heed Colin's advice. I'm Ara. Thanks for listening, guys.
Bye, we'll guys.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info and the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your base are belong to us.